Hi, so good afternoon and welcome, and thank you very much for joining us. We're here today to talk to you about how you can enhance the UX in your Windows 10 app using effects, animations, and controls. So before we get started, my name is James Clark. I'm a program manager on the Windows Developer Platform team.
And I'm David Lee, also a program manager on the Windows Developer Platform.
And we work on the team that builds the platform, so we're delighted to be able to be here today with you and actually share some of our work today. So let's just take a quick look at the agenda. We've got six areas that we want to cover. The first one is just an introduction to building rich experiences on Windows 10. We want to talk to you about some of the things that are new in the Windows 10 Creators Update, and that's both in terms of the animation and effects layer, as well as some things from the input and interaction layer. We want to talk to you about toolkits and libraries and show you how they can really make it easy to get to some of the features that we'll be sharing. And then we want to bring it all together and show you some of our end-to-end samples and how you can really bring these things together. So let's kick it off and talk a little bit about Windows 10. And Windows 10 gives developers the reach to a wide ecosystem of devices, ranging from desktop PCs through mobile phones and IoT to mixed reality headsets and Xbox. And Windows 10 and the platform provides all the technology and tools that developers need to write engaging applications, and then with a single application to target this range and reach of devices with a highly tailored experience. And it's really not about the technology only. It's also a huge thing about this is the community. And the developers, you guys out there that are watching us right now, are a really big part of this. And from our point of view, the work that we do together is just as important as the platform itself. So we've been investing heavily in the UI platform and the UX of Windows for a number of releases now. And really, you know, we've been focusing very much on craftsmanship and polish and really kind of bringing the experience to the next level. We also tried to sort of introduce and create some new sort of playful personality aspects that we bring to the platform. And the most important thing is that we want to make it easy for you to get these kind of behaviors in your application. So really our vision and the vision that we've been working on for a number of releases now and that we will continue to pursue is to make beautiful, engaging experiences possible on the Windows platform simply and by default. So what does that really mean and how does that manifest in an app? Well, really we want to enable a new class of user experiences and UI that feel alive and have depth. And so the use of Z, the use of kind of natural motion and so forth. And also we want to have UI that is responsive to touch and other inputs so that, you know, users can have confidence and have a very kind of good and refined stick to your finger kind of experience. And finally, we'll also just reinforce this notion of playfulness and how we can introduce and bring kind of, you know, things that are fundamentally mundane and make them feel much more playful and joyful. And the result of this, and really the whole point and why we're doing it in the platform, why we're encouraging developers to do it as well, because it really brings users and makes them much more engaged with your applications, which is, you know, a phenomenally good and useful thing. So with that introduction said, I think we want to dive in and show a demo. We're now going to switch over to David's machine, and we're going to just show you kind of an overview of our sample gallery and some of these kind of experiences that we can deliver.
Right. So what I'm bringing up now is the Windows UI DevLab sample gallery. For those of you who don't know, this is a GitHub project that the Windows UI team has created to showcase some of the powerful UI functionality, effects, and animations, and really the end-to-end scenarios that those pieces of functionality can bring about. So up at the top, we see some broad categories, like seamless transitions or dynamic human interaction to world to real-world UI. And this gallery is a place that serves as both a reference for developers who might want to just start playing around with some of the APIs that we'll be talking about today, or it's great to find inspiration for maybe how to improve like app UI or app experiences. For instance, this swipe scroller example is an upgrade of the scroll viewer control, and really it brings together fluid input experiences. So here I'm touching this Berlin and then swiping, touching Brussels, and it really combines the fluid input with subtle animations that really puts your scroll viewer to the next level. And so it's completely open source. The gallery is completely open source, available online. We'll be rolling out quite a few samples in the next few days, so be on the lookout for that. Go to the Git repo, and maybe you'll be able to find some inspiration that'll help you differentiate your app's experience on Windows. So speaking of differentiate, let's talk about what some of the new features in the Creators Update are and what it can possibly mean for your app. James?
Awesome. Yeah, so if we could switch back to my machine, please. So what we're going to talk about now is just some of the investments we've been making. I've been mentioning that we're sort of on a multi-year journey and really sort of wanting to upgrade the platform. And this is going to show you some of the newer things that we've been working on. And when we talk about these investments, we think about them in three buckets, really. Firstly, kind of the content, the types of content we support. What are kind of some of the animations and transitions that we enable? And finally, the effects. So starting off with content, I think this one, David, you probably agree. We've heard loud and clear from customers that, you know, bringing SVG to the XAML platform is you know, right, something that we wanted for a long time. And the good news is it's here now in the Windows Creators Update. And I'll show you a demo of that in a sec. Not only are we adding SVG, we're adding a bunch of other enhancements. So, you know, accessibility is a huge, huge area that we've been investing in very, very heavily. And so we now have support for keytips and mnemonics. Very easy to get to those. Strike through text is one of those things that, you know, it's an oldie and a goodie. We now have it in the platform. And finally, we've added the ability to support icons in menus. And so let's actually hop over now and show you a demo of these in Visual Studio. And I'm going to kind of kick this off to actually show my favorite new feature in Visual Studio 2017. So I'm just coming up with a blank application. I've snapped it. You can see the application here is running, and my editor is open. And basically, what I'm able to do now is something that we call XAML Edit and Continue, which is an awesome feature. You may have seen it already as part of various launch events that have been happening. I'm just going to show it to you right now. So let's start by typing in a text block here. And I'm just going to say, hello, Visual Studio 2017. And as soon as I stop typing, you can see that in my running application, there the text immediately appears. And this is, you know, for any developer that's been working with XAML over the years, this is kind of a huge win. It's the kind of thing we've been very envious of our cousins over in the HTML land for. I'm now going to come in, change the font size, pop it up there. And every time I make a change, it's all fully dynamic. It's fully live. Huge deal there. So let's now add an image into this. And so I have a nice little snippet that I prepared, and I'm going to bring that one in. And this is just bringing in a PNG asset that I want to show you. And PNG is obviously a great file format, easy to work with. The problem with it is that it's kind of a bitmap format. And so it only supports a single resolution at any given moment. And so as we scale that asset up, you can see here that it's kind of going a little bit blurry. So wouldn't it be lovely if we could actually kind of use SVG? And as I showed you just now, that's entirely there and possible today. So let's copy this image. Let's duplicate it. And we'll come in here. Looks as if we may need to just change that over to SVG. I forgot to put in my stack panel to see both of them at once. So let's just put that in quickly. And we can see them then side by side. And over we go. And there you see kind of the blurry one next to the crisp one. And the awesome aspect of this is even if we kind of make this arbitrarily large, because it's a vector-based format, it will remain crisp all the way. The other lovely thing about supporting SVG here is that designers who are very familiar with tools like Adobe Illustrator, they're used to using these vector tools. They can now just directly apply the assets into the XAML project. So now let's show you another piece of tooling that we're adding in Visual Studio 2017. And this is awesome. This is a capability that we call the Best Practices Analyzer. What I'm going to do here is I'm just going to, for my initial text block here, set its visibility to be collapsed. And that's fine. I'm basically hiding the element. And there's really nothing wrong with doing that. However, there is actually a performance implication for doing that, because even though the text block is now invisible, we're still paying all of the penalty to actually have to go and create the object, new it up. And if that wasn't a text block, if that was some more elaborate control that was doing a bunch of logic when we new it up, that would obviously be causing us a relatively kind of relevant performance penalty. So if we come over to the diagnostic tools and just have a little look in here, you'll see a great new feature that we've added that's called the UI Analysis diagnostic tool. And what this does is that at runtime, it essentially inspects what's going on. And according to a series of rules that have been defined by the experts in the XAML team, it's able to highlight this kind of problem. And you can see down here in the palette, it's telling me that I have a text block that it's collapsed at load time. And the problem with collapsing it is exactly explained here. There's also a great link where I can go into that link and see, you know, what's the proposed mitigation for this. In this instance, we have a lazy loading capability in XAML, and that would actually be a better way of handling this situation. So pretty cool stuff. There's actually a range of different kind of plugins for the analyzer. So things like, you know, if you have a list view that's not virtualized, things like missing accessibility UIA strings, all of these kind of best practices are baked into the tooling and really help you as a developer kind of learn and understand how you can improve your application. So pretty cool stuff. So now let's just show you the final piece of this demo. What I'm going to do is come in here, and I'm actually going to add to my stack panel a command bar. So if we, again, use our snippet capability, and we're going to insert a little command bar snippet here. And basically, this is showing off some of the new capabilities that we've done around both access keys. And you can see here on the app bar button that I'm highlighting, we've actually specified an access key of S. And that means that when we run the application, we'll actually get this prompt, and that, you know, if we want to trigger that functionality from the keyboard, it's much more discoverable. Also, in our command bar secondary commands, we've added the ability to have these icons in menus. So again, the little refinements, the polish, the craftsmanship, we're bringing that in. And so if we run this very quickly, we can show both of those things working. The first one there, as we start up, is our little icons in the menu. Again, you know, just feels nicer, feels more familiar to have those icons, and makes it easier to sort of disambiguate between the commands. And then if I hit the Alt key on the keyboard, this is something you'll be familiar with if you've used Office at all, is this ability to quickly index in, and I can just literally hit Alt and S and trigger that command very simply. So, you know, lots of small refinements, but really taken together, some pretty powerful capabilities here. So that's our first demo. Let's hop back to the slides now, and we're going to move on and talk a little bit about some animations and transitions. So I'll pass that to David.
Right. So in terms of the animations and transitions improvements that we've made in the creators update, we have made improvements to connected animations. We've added implicit show hide. But rather than just tell you about them, let's take a look at the demo. I have it running on my machine, and I'll introduce them one at a time. So this is the navigation flow sample that was recently uploaded to the GitHub. And what is seen here is that when you click on an element, it transitions to a second page. So there's a master page and a details page. In the master's page is a grid view with a lot of elements. And when you click on any particular item, it navigates to the details page where you have some text and things like that. Here, I've disabled the connected animations, so let's focus on implicit animations for the moment. Implicit animations, for those who are not aware, are animations that trigger when a property on a particular visual in the visual layer has been changed. And so if we look in the code for the destination page, so the code consists of a source page and a destination page. If we look in the code behind for the destination page, we see that there is, for this particular instance that we're looking at, this is adding an opacity animation that's going to play when we exit the scene. So that's when I press the back button, there's an opacity animation that kind of fades out the content that was in the details side of it. And here we set up the details of the animation, have a keyframe for it, and then we call set implicit hide animation, which we've added for the creators update. Previously, implicit animations were only available when the offset when the offset and some other properties of the visual have changed. Now we've added show and hide. So what this is doing, it's saying that when the element first appears on screen, or when the element disappears, as is the case with this hide animation, we play the animation that is associated with that element. So you no longer have to specify manually, when I click on this button, show or make this disappear, run a keyframe. This is what implicit animations handles for you automatically. But if we jump back to the app, it's a basic transition, it's nice, but it's still missing something. There are still issues. For instance, when I click on, say, item 10, we have our attention drawn to the right side of the screen. When I click on the button, suddenly, in the new page, item 10 appears on the left side of the screen and it comes down. There is a break in the continuity of that experience. And really, the user has to get used to that kind of shift in context. I click on something on the right side, and suddenly my interest, my attention has to shift to the left side of the screen. And so there is a way to use connected animations to hook those up so that the element from the master's page goes smoothly and fluidly to the details page.
And so, David, the user will then get this feeling of more continuity. So it's less of this sort of jarring kind of pop, but more of a kind of continuation.
Right. And so we'll see that. Let's add back in the connected animations code that I've edited out, and I will. You will see how easy it is to do that. So we go into the code behind for the source page, where I've commented out one call to connected animation service, so let me just stop the app. I've commented out a call to connected animation service, which sets the time. Excuse me for a second here. Okay, which specifies a time span for that particular animation. And then, and here's something we added for the creator's update. So previously, we had connected animations, but you were only able to do those for individual items. You had to set them up for each item that you were interested in. For the creator's update, we've added support helpers on grid view and list view controls that essentially help you set up these connected animations. So now they're easier than ever before. We have this prepared connected animation call. And for this particular call, we specify a key that we will use to later reference on the destinations page which particular thing we want to connect. We then, for the remainder of it, we have the item that we want to affect, and then the element that we want to target. We set this up, and on the its single line on the source page, we move to the destination page.
And so this is where we're sort of receiving that element on the target page, if that's a good way of putting it.
Right. So we move to the destination page. And I'm going to comment this part out, or comment this part back in. And I'm going to run it so that it has time to build. What this is doing is that this is calling connected animation service. Here, it's getting the animation using the string for the key that we specified before. So it's saying, get me the connected animation that I specified previously called border source, and then let's start it with the destination of that being border dest, which is an which is the large blue square on the details page. So when we added those two lines, one line on the source, one line on the destination, let's take a look at what the transition looks like now. So now when we click on any particular element, we see that the square flows smoothly and expands in size to match the destination.
And it almost feels as if it's a single page. It kind of really breaks right. That illusion there's a navigation even, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and definitely it retains the context that it was before. You selected, imagine this was a recipe book or a photo album. You've clicked on a photo, you've clicked on a recipe, and you really want to keep track of that particular element with your eye so as to maintain engagement with the application. And so one of the things that's new for the Creators Update that astute observers who've used this feature in the anniversary update might have noticed is that there's a little bonus that you have available now.
Is it that caption text, by any chance?
Why, yes, it is. So if we look at the caption text, it actually...
It's kind of tracking in next to the thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It flies along with the blue square. And before, it just faded in. So how did we change that? Let's take a look at the code, the two lines. It was still done in the same two lines. In the code, this is new, which is we've added a second parameter to try start, and it's a list of UI elements that we're calling coordinated elements, And what this can do is it can fire off a coordinated animation. What that means is you can specify UI elements in your try start that you're saying, when this animation happens, this connected animation happens, I want these elements to go along, to animate along with it. So we've defined an animation for description root, but here we just specify that we want the description root to animate alongside, and the description root is the text.
And again, this, I think, if we think back to what we were talking about, craftsmanship, you know, again, it's a small thing, it's quite subtle, mm-hmm. but it really brings that next level of polish and that next level of perfection to the animation.
Right, and so, and that's what we've done to make these seamless transitions much easier. And so, that's transitions.
Awesome.
And it's pretty cool. We're gonna now move on to the next.
If we could come back to the slides, please, that would yeah. be awesome.
Let's go back to the slides. And now we're going to move on to another feature that a lot of people are excited about, which is effects. So effects are things like blur, saturation, tint, and it was previously possible in the visual layer, but we've done the work to now make it easy. We've now done the work to bring it to XAML, and you can use it in XAML markup. You can apply your effects to the XAML elements in markup, and it's just so easy. You have to check it out. That we've done the same thing for lighting. We've brought lights, which were available again in the visual layer, now to XAML. You can specify lights in markup, spotlights, ambient lights, and that can really differentiate your experience. And we'll show you an example of that a little later. And so let's first take a look at what the effects look like when you're using it in XAML markup.
Awesome. So if we could switch back over to the machine, we'll actually show you the demo.
Okay. And so I've opened up another sample called Brush Interop. And Brush Interop, there's no interactability with this one, but we want to concentrate on each individual rectangle by itself of this grid. And I'm going to go through only a few of them today. The first one that we want to pay attention to is the top left rectangle. The top left rectangle contains basically an image, and you can see, it may be a little hard to see on video, but there we have applied an animation, and it's animating the saturation and tint of the image. So it's going from a little bit of blue to a little bit of red, so cooler, warmer, and that is done through markup. So let's take a look at what the code looks like.
So this is a pretty big deal because this is really where you can start to really kind of easily apply these brushes and easily reuse them in things like resource dictionaries.
Right. So the entirety of the XAML for that first grid the top left, is contained here in these few lines. So we called it image effect grid, and there's really nothing here, and there's nothing really in the code behind for brushinterop.xaml.cs. All of the magic happens here in a new brush type that we added for the creators update in XAML that we're calling XAML composition brush. So image effect brush is a custom brush that we've created that inherits from XAML composition brush base. So let's take a look at what that looks like. So this is what we added, XAML composition brush. We take a peek at what's in composition, XAML composition brush. And in addition to an onConnected, onDisconnected, the important thing here is that there is a property called composition brush. When you set that to an effect brush, a mask brush, any of the brush types that are available in the visual layer, you can get that effect applied on to whatever you're painting. In this case, it's the background of a grid.
So anywhere in your XAML where you would normally accept or take a brush, we can now plug these kind of effects in.
Exactly.
That's pretty awesome.
Right, and so the code for this is fairly straightforward, and it's fairly similar to how we've set up effects in the past. So we load the image of the sand dunes onto an image surface, and then we define an effect graph. Well, the effect graph consists this time of a saturation and a temperature and tint. And then we stuff that all into an effect brush, and we set that to the composition brush property that we saw before. Oh, and for good measure, we've added some animations to it just to make it more fun.
Nice.
And this is now a fully defined brush. We go back to this sample, and we notice that we've added the brushes to the resource dictionary, and that was a brush that we defined, and we can now, because it's XAML, and because it's part of the resource dictionary, we can now reuse it anywhere else we want. We can put the file somewhere else, give it to others, share it with the community, and or you can get community brushes, and you can use those.
And so as you know, if your designers wanted to change the look of something, they could just update that resource definition, and it would just kind of cascade and flow through the entire app.
Right.
Awesome. Very
yes.
Nice.
And so that is the top left. Now, there's only a subtle difference, but let's take a look at the bottom left rectangle. And the bottom rectangle has the exact same image as the top. And if you notice, it's also animating in the same way as the top left. And that's because it's using the same effect brush that we've previously defined. So again, reuse. And the only difference is it's painted in the shape of this like pie with a slice cut out. And why is that the case? If we look in the code, we see that that's because this grid contains path information, XAML vector path, that is in the shape of a pie with a slice of it cut out. And instead of painting the grid background, we're now painting the fill of the path with the exact same brush. So very easily, you can have this vector shape, defined in XAML, and you can just fill it with this brush that you've defined previously or you've gotten from the community. And so it's actually made things much easier. Before, this was very difficult to do. And then the last thing that we're going to take a look at is the bottom right corner. This is the donut. And here, it's a little bit different. We're using the same picture, yes, but it is a XAML image, and we're not applying to an effect to the entirety of the image. Instead, we're only applying an effect, and that's the animating blur that you may notice in the donut, in the shape of the donut.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We take a look at the code, and this is very much similar to what we've done previously. There is a grid that has the sand dunes picture. The path data indicating that it's the donut shape that we want to fill. And then we've specified another one, a backdrop tint blur brush. And in backdrop tint blur brush, we can see that pretty much the only thing that's different here is that it has a different effect graph. This one's using a blending, a silver like color source effect with a Gaussian blur that targets the background. So it's like a backdrop blur type of effect. And so you can define any combination of these effects, create brushes, and apply them to your visuals.
Awesome.
And so that's something that is made now much easier.
That's awesome.
Right. And if we switch back to James's computer,
Have we got one more thing, David?
Yes. We switch back to James's computer. It looks like he has the next sample set up.
I do. If we could just switch back to the other machine, please.
So.
Looks like.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you.
And so this is XAML Lights. So XAML composition brush base is not the only new thing that we've added. We've also made lighting much easier, like I've mentioned before. And this sample is something that demonstrates it.
So where's the lighting? I don't see any lighting.
Right. So if you just hover your mouse over the image.
Oh, wow.
Right. So what's happening here is it's the same sand dunes picture. Yes, it's the same image on a inside of a grid. And we're applying an effect to this square content. And on the square, we've loaded a normal map. That's why there's this design on it. We've used a cracked screen almost type of normal map so that the lighting is more interesting. You don't actually have to add a normal map and the lighting will still work. We just thought this would be a little bit cooler. And so if we see here, like it's defined in very much the same way. In XAML, you specify that you want to use, you apply an effect onto the square. This time it's a blur and a saturation, a bunch of things combined together with a scene lighting effect. And then we've tied the position of the mouse pointer. So we've defined a spotlight in XAML. And I won't show you the code because it's very similar to the XAML one, the XAML composition brush. And we're running a little bit, you know, we're let's sake of time. And this particular sample has a spotlight attached to the position of the mouse cursor. So when you move the cursor, the spotlight changes position, which can create these interesting effects that you see.
And there's
now
also a lovely little delightful effect. As I move the mouse out, you can see kind of like a little ripple, like a drop in a pool.
Right, which definitely tells you that, like, with like some design, like, you know, if you think a little bit more about the design and add some playful elements to it, it can really make for a much neater experience.
Yes, I mean, you, again, if we think about what we said about making mundane things more playful, this is definitely an example where we can really bring this capability and bring a very much more delightful feeling to the app.
Exactly.
Awesome. Okay.
And so that's effects.
That's great. So if we now go back into our PowerPoint deck, what are we going to talk about next? Well, what we're going to talk about next is a little bit about the visual layer. And what David just took you through and showed you there was really, these were a series of things that we kind of invested in the visual layer back in the anniversary update of Windows 10. And now we're kind of exposing and making easy at the XAML layer in the Creators Update. So for the Creators Update, there's a set of new things that we're building in the visual layer to make a range of new things kind of possible. So let's talk through some of those. So the first one is Virtual Surface. And Virtual Surface, I've got a demo that I'll show you in a minute. But you can think of this as if you're building kind of like a mapping app where you may have an absolutely massive image that's potentially vast and huge. You can't fit that into a regular image. You know, you can't display it all at once. How do you display it? Like, if it's millions of pixels in size, if it's kind of coming from GIS data or something like that, or if it's a picture from your camera, you know, a raw picture, like a, you know, 40 or 50 megapixel image, you can't easily, if you zoom in, see that all at once. And so virtual surfaces really are a tool that allow you to achieve those kind of fluid panning and zooming experiences across a big, huge, massive image. And I'll show you, as I say, a demo in a second. On the animation side of things, the couple of things that we're working on there, one of them we've heard loud and clear about our expression system. It's super powerful, but it can be a little bit intimidating. So we're working on some capabilities there to improve the authoring experience. And we're also extending the kind of implicit animation system that David referred to earlier. To be able to target more properties. So things like drop shadows, things like property sets, and also things like inset clip. And so, you know, again, these are things where if you bring the ingredients together, you can essentially get a whole series of automatic animations applied without having to go and storyboard out the different choreographs that you want to achieve there. And then finally, on the effects system side, we're adding some new brushes, some new color brushes, new border brushes, some new abilities to kind of apply effects to window backgrounds. And these are all kind of things that again, they make new scenarios possible at the visual layer. And so the majority of developers will work up in XAML. For those that want to reach down, maybe control authors, or if you have a very sort of specific scenario, you can reach down, use the visual layer, and access some of this power. So with that said, I'm now going to show a very quick demo of virtual surfaces. I'm just going to jump back over into Visual Studio, and we're going to say hello to virtual surfaces. So, as I mentioned, you know, if you think of like a 40 megapixel image in a camera, that sounds like a lot of pixels, but actually the kind of dimensions of that image are about, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 or maybe 6,000 pixels wide by sort of 3,000 or 4,000 high. What if you wanted to have 2 million wide by 2 million high? Like that's like absolutely massive.
You mean I can't just use a big grid to put it all in?
You can't just use a big grid. You can't just use a big image. So what we do is we have this magic of virtual surfaces. And this demo really is kind of showing you the concept here of tiling. So I've hooked this up to our interaction, our input-driven animation system. So that means that as I touch or as I use my precision trackpad, I'm able to kind of animate this. You can see I have my nice inertia curves that flick. You can also inject the motion, so I can actually kind of click a button and inject that motion and sort of put an impulse in. And this is all beautifully fluid, beautifully smooth. It's all running at 60 frames a second on the GPU. Now, the magic is, if I sort of pan, you'll notice that the kind of counts that you see in the cells that just will go on forever. I can literally just pan this thing forever. I'm already at kind of 4,000 across, and I can literally keep going all the way to 1 million across. Now, the magic of how this works is, under the hood, we're only really essentially using video memory for what you see on the screen. So the regions outside are kind of not painted or drawn into until they need to come onto the screen. And so there's an intentional bug, and I'm going to use the intentional bug here to kind of show you this actually happening. So if I flick it really fast, you actually see the draw action occur. You can see a little bit of white comes into view. Notice that the elements that are already drawn are still moving smoothly because our animation system is kind of attached to that virtual surface and is making that move nicely. And then as a developer, I go in and I essentially do the draw operation when I need to. So if we jump over into the code, I'll just show you two very little quick breakpoints that explain this in a bit more detail. To do that, my second most favorite feature of Visual Studio, Control T, which is universal go-to. And I know that the function in question is called configure sprite visual, and I can just very quickly type that in. Doesn't matter if it's a function name, a file name, it will literally just magically find it for me. And here you can see I'm declaring my virtual surface size, and you can see my tile size is 250, and I've said create a width of 10,000 of those. And so we have this, you know, massive, massive region. There's no way, you know, your graphics card will catch fire if you try to load this many pixels into it. But with the magic of what we're doing at the visual layer, we're able to kind of make that possible. And then we go in and we get to grab our composition graphic device and we create this virtual drawing surface with that size, with the pixel format. And then if we go to our second method, which is called draw tile, and again, using the magic of Visual Studio Control T, very easy to find that function in my main page. And I'm just going to put a breakpoint in here. And in fact, I'm going to put a breakpoint just in case you don't believe me. On my previous method, so we'll go back to configure sprite visual, put a breakpoint in there, and we will just run this. And just to really prove that this is indeed a 2.5 million by 2.5 million surface, you'll see there is my width. If I hover, you'll see the tooltip, and there is my height. We go away and create it, and now we're doing sort of the initial population of that thing. So we're essentially drawing each of the tiles that are in view. And so now if I comment out the breakpoint and let it run, it'll paint the initial view, switch back. And now as I start to pan around, you'll see that it's not calling my drawing function. And that's because this is a retained surface. It's sitting on the GPU, and we've hooked up our animation system to it. And so it's not until we need to draw tiles that are not visible. And so the magic of that will happen as I drag across sufficiently far. Actually, I need to re-enable my breakpoint, first of all. I drag across, and again, it's not hitting the breakpoint, and now it will draw. And at this point, it's now telling me I need to draw kind of like column 16. So we're drawing ahead, and so as the animation moves the virtual surface into view, it will appear. And so, you know, we're working on actually a great sample of this that's actually showing a mapping example where you can kind of have like a deep zoom kind of experience of panning across a massive gigapixel map image GIS data source and zooming into it. So
right, and maps really do this a lot.
They do it a lot, exactly. So stay tuned for that one. Awesome. So let's drop out of this. Now, and once again, I mentioned that, you know, we're making this possible in the visual layer. And so this is absolutely something that we think control vendors, you know, if you're building a mapping control, this is absolutely something that would be applicable to you. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Now let's hop over now and talk about input. So input, and particularly multimodal input, is one of the key differentiators for Windows and Windows devices. And we've done a lot of work in the ink stack and adding flexible new devices like the Surface Dial that really give many, many possibilities for multimodal input. In the Creators Update, we're adding a bunch of enhancements here, and we're adding them across the different dimensions. So Windows Ink, first of all. This is awesome. I think many people that saw the anniversary update will be aware of our ruler control, where I get this virtual ruler, I can draw nice straight lines. We're now bringing a protractor version. So if you like angles and circles, the protractor tool is there to help you. And as a developer, it's virtually no code. It's just a little bit of markup that you add to get the protractor. We're also adding support for a pencil with tilt support so that you can do this beautiful sort of shaded pencil effect. And on the dial side, we're kind of taking the dial control and integrating it into the ink toolbar. Now, one of my favorite features with inking is smart ink. We took ink and we made it super fast, super performant, super easy to get in your app in the anniversary update. Now in the creators update, we're taking it to the next level by making it intelligent. So ink can now not only flow fluidly from the pen, But as a developer, you can access recognition and custom recognizers for things like text and numbers and shapes that allow you to sort of derive semantic meaning from that awesome ink experience. On the interaction side, on the dial side, we're adding new features to the dial, some kind of capabilities to get into the haptic feedback a little bit. And then on the interaction side, we've made some improvements to Interaction Tracker. Interaction Tracker was actually powering that virtual services demo just now that I showed where we were panning around, and we've made some awesome enhancements there. So I want to now show you some more stuff on Smart Ink. So if we jump out here and back into Visual Studio, we have a nice sample here. This sample is about to go live in the next Insider Preview goes out, coming soon. And what this sample does, I have a pen here, and I'm going to use it to actually draw on the screen. So I'm going to draw a circle, and it's pretty bad, that circle. But because of the power of this sort of semantic input system, the devices and the system, the software is able to recognize what I'm doing. I can draw a nice square, and that square is kind of off axis. I did a little squiggle at the end, so that was a bit of a fail, but let's try it again. Boom, there you go. And now we've got two squares, how lovely. What about a triangle? Let's see if that will work. And again, this is really the power of recognition in the system. I don't have to go and write the sort of low-level code to go figure out how to build a recognizer. I can just get it relatively easily. How do I get it, you may ask? Well, let's have a look. So here I'm using a familiar Ink Canvas. We added this in the anniversary update. Ink Canvas is how you can just drop a control into your XAML markup and kind of get this inking surface. And then up here at the top, you'll see the ink toolbar. And this is where you get kind of the custom controls for free just by dropping it into the XAML. Now, how do we hook that up in code and get it to recognize things? Well, great question. Let's take a look at the top of this source file. And what we'll see here in the constructor is we're basically going and getting our ink canvas from the XAML, and we're accessing the ink presenter property. And the ink presenter is really where some of the kind of intelligence comes in. If we have a look at the ink presenter stroke collected event, that will fire when a stroke is collected. And what happens in here is our ink analyzer is given those strokes, and it can then go off and do its intelligent analysis. We've got a dispatcher timer set up here. And once again, using my magic control T in Visual Studio, I'm just going to search for tick. And it's going to take me straight to that timer firing event. And when the timer fires, essentially what it does is it looks to see, is the ink analyzer still analyzing? So I think when I did the first attempt at the square, it probably hadn't finished analyzing. And so when I drew the second one, it had, and that's why we got two. If the ink analyzer is no longer analyzing, we're able to go in and actually kind of take any resulting shapes that have come out of that analysis process. And then as a developer, we're able to go in and do custom things. So if I just come back and draw another thing, another object here, you'll see convert shapes is called. I drew a line in this case. So if we just step into that, hopefully it will let me step into it. In here, what I can then do is the kind of custom recognition and drawing that I want. So this is where, as a developer, I can choose how to interpret what I've seen and how to actually then rationalize and rasterize it. So the second quick demo we'll do is showing text. We've had powerful text recognition in Windows for a while, but we haven't made it available before as a building block for you to use as a developer. What you can now do is you can access the power of our text recognition engine in conjunction with the Ink Canvas. So if I try and write on my screen, hello, terrible handwriting, Visual
better than mine
Studio at an angle, and if I tap on it, you can see that the system has noticed and recognized that collection of strokes has some other meaning. And there's actually capabilities here where I could take that and I could keep it in the ink domain, but I could maybe use alignment and I could have two sentences and actually make them kind of align together. In this case, if I double click, I can actually run the recognition engine, and you can see there it's just recognized my horrible scrawly handwriting. And
this will help my note-taking quite a bit.
It's pretty nice. And this is a thing that you have as a developer. So this is absolutely a platform capability that you can have at your beck and call to take advantage of. So let's jump back to the slides. And we're going to change gears now in the remaining 15 minutes or so. And we're actually going to talk a little bit about toolkits and libraries. So a lot of the features we've shown you, we're striving to make much easier to use and to make really as simple as we can by exposing them in markup. However, there's always a possibility to do more, to have more controls, to have more capabilities that are easier to use. And so there's a couple of toolkits that we'll spend a few minutes talking about. So the first one that you may have heard of, quite possibly, the UWP Community Toolkit. This came out, I guess, a few months ago now. It's been very, very well received, and because, you know, we really started from scratch and making this thing a community-driven effort. We really wanted to have you guys out there as developers involved, and not only as consumers of the toolkit. Maybe you just want to go grab the NuGet reference, but you may also want to participate. You may want to take your ideas and kind of put them in there as something that the community can reuse. So we started this as an open source project, and we really focused on make it easy to use and reliable if you're a consumer, and open and community driven if you want to contribute to it. What's in it, you may ask? Great question. So a couple of different things. Firstly, there's a series of animations, and I'll show you some of these in a minute. And these are really kind of wrapped up and encapsulated to the degree that it's usually just one line of code to apply a lot of this. So the power that we showed you just now, that you can actually go and custom program, you can write maybe a few tens of lines of code. You can now get this just simply in a single behavior, just a single piece of markup. Second area that we've invested in here is around services. And, you know, pretty much every app these days is connected in some way to some service. Mm-hmm. Many popular services out there. So let's make that easier. And again, with just a few of the kind of connection strings, and, you know, you sign up with a service, drop it in, drop the control in, and you're then able to kind of query, post, tweet, retrieve data from Facebook, those kind of things. And then the final area is controls. And this is, again, not just controls, but also behaviors, which will allow you to enhance existing controls. And this is, again, just filling many, many places where, you know, there's richer possibilities to do kind of easier to use and richer controls. So that's great, but what does it actually give me as a developer? Well, that's a great question, and let's go look at the demo. So let's jump now to our toolkit project. And what's cool about the toolkit is we actually have a great kind of collection and sample app that shows all of the different capabilities wrapped up in a nice app itself. And that app is actually also available in the App Store. So if you don't want to get Visual Studio, you don't want to go and clone the repo and go through the trouble of building it, you can actually just go directly to the App Store. You can search for the UWP Community Toolkit sample and get and play with these various samples that I will show you right now. So a couple of quick ones to look at. First one, Drop Shadow Panel. So Drop Shadow is a capability that we added at the visual layer back in the anniversary update. And with this control, you get it really, really easily in markup. And so we just expand and have a look at the XAML. You can see there's various controls I have here. But really, the key is looking inside of the markup and just seeing, there it is. It's just a Drop Shadow Panel. I set things like the blur radius and the opacity on it. And boom, there it is. I don't have to worry any further from there. The second one that I'm going to show is showing the dial. So if we scroll down and look at this one, I really like this. So this is just a text box. I have a dial here. And as I rotate the dial on the desk, I'm seeing that nice kind of ability to scrub through values. I can feel the haptic feedback on the dial coming through my fingertips right now, almost like something from a superhero movie. It's pretty fun. Again, how do I get this as a developer? Pretty easy. It's actually an attached behavior. So this is not a different kind of text block. It's not text box. It's not a custom control. It's an attached behavior. And so here you can see attaching the behavior, setting in the stepper values, and you know, off to the races we go.
Let's take a look at Parallax.
Let's take a look at Parallax. And I think that's under the animation category. So Parallax, again, this is something that brings that fluidity and that input-driven nature that we talked about that really makes users feel connected to the experience. And again, it wraps it up into control. So you can see the parallax is occurring here. Again, we enabled this in the anniversary update. You had to go write some code once again.
But now, this is something that we've been getting a lot of feedback. A lot of developers are really wanting to achieve this effect. And now it's really easy to do so.
Absolutely. And you can see here that we have the parallax service there hooked up. And again, directly from markup, we get that great ability just by adding this NuGet project reference. Then I think the final one we'll show is the reorder grid one. And this is another thing that we added. We added layout animations in the anniversary update. And this is where we get sort of a much more fluid resize kind of behavior. So instead of the kind of classical layout runs and it's a bit of a kind of thunk, you actually get this much more fluid and delightful animation there. That also is something that you know, we wanted to make easy. So by merely, I think in this case, annotating your grid view with this behavior, again, you just specify duration, and once again, you are off to the races. So check out the community toolkit for UWP. It's a great resource. And really, for those that you look at the code we show going, wow, I don't want to deal with that, this is a great way of getting a lot of that capability. And for those of you that are interested in authoring and contributing, it's another great opportunity to get your GitHub stars up, your kind of GitHub activity by getting and engaging and helping out with that one. So with that, let's come back to the slides. And we're going to talk about the second toolkit. This is a pretty cool one as well. And I'll let David talk about it.
Right, and so this is the Composition Pro Toolkit. So this, we showed the UWP Community Toolkit, and there's a lot of stuff in there that we think users would love. But in the event that like none of the things that we've shown are things that you want to use, or like you have some more advanced requirements, there's a whole community out there making tools of their own. And so this one is actually by a Windows insider, a member of our community, Ratish Philip.
Shout out to Ratish if he's watching.
Yes.
Thank you for this awesome contribution.
Right. And so this is the Composition Pro Toolkit. It has a lot of helper classes for both composition and Win2D. And I'll just show you to see all of the powerful things you can do. And he's wrapped them up really simply so that you can use them in your XAML.
Awesome. So let's switch over and show David's machine, please.
Yes.
Thank you.
And so this is the Ratish's sample gallery that he's created for his toolkit. And we can see that here, there's a number of different really interesting things. There's a customized like progress ring. There is a reflection, support for reflection. So any subtree of visual elements, you can just say, you know, create reflection, and it creates a reflection either to the bottom, and it's customizable. And this is one of my favorite ones, which is a kind of like a fluid layout kind
of. I love this. This is so cool.
Right. And so as you move these elements, the other elements in this particular control, they flow around it to rearrange themselves. So you can even see this as like an entire layout like paradigm.
And again, like just to really bring the point home, this brings that playfulness. It can make the mundane, yeah, like just moving things around, mm-hmm, feel so much more kind of engaging and playful.
Right, and so we won't be diving into this too deeply, but let's take a look at one of the samples that he has, which is the a banner sample. And we can see how easy it is to implement it in code if you use his gallery. And so here, there's a number of movie posters that when you click on, it smoothly animates and it opens up. You close it, you click another one, and it's very smooth. He's combined animations and created subtle like effects to make this all work. Now let's just quickly take a look at the code for this fluid banner. And there's really not much in the code behind. It's mostly to add the pictures into the control. And this is it. This single line, he's wrapped it up. And so this is just an example of like how our community has been working with the tools that we provide, with the functionality of the platform, to make even more advanced and cooler things. And so check out his toolkit. Feel free to like contribute toolkits of your own, like, and engage with us on the community.
Awesome. Yeah, this is really great. So if we could go back to the slides again, please. We're going to now move into the final section of the talk, and we're just going to talk about sort of bringing all of this together into a single experience. You know, thinking end to end is key, and again, like we've shown you a whole bunch of ingredients and kind of different levels of tech to use. But at the end of the day, it's about the experience. It's about really focusing in on the experience and by doing so, bringing your users in and engaging them. And so to sort of help illustrate this, one of our teams has created an awesome set of end-to-end samples. And what's nice about these is they're really trying to bring all of the best practices together in one place. There's a series of different scenarios that we have, you know, featuring kind of common patterns, social apps, video apps, those kind of things. And these have all been built in a way that works well across the range of devices. So as we mentioned at the beginning, one of the key kind of points of the UWP platform is the ability to target Xbox and to target kind of head-mounted AR/VR displays and those kind of things. So these are a great series to go kick the tires on. There's a GitHub link here. you can go grab these and play with them and deploy them, see how they work. We've added one recently, a couple of weeks ago when Kevin Gallo presented our Developer Days talk. We showed this Northwind photo example. And this is a nice way we're going to wrap up today and show you stuff that really brings all of these different capabilities together. So with that said, we will jump over to Northwind Photo. This version of the app we do have now in GitHub, and this is really showing all of the animations and effects that we've featured at the developer day, but actually now the code is live, so you can go check it out and kick the tires.
Right, and as you're moving around, you see lights, you see animations.
You do.
Everything that we've been talking about
exactly.
Brought together.
So we're bringing it together. We've got a grid view here. We've added various animations to it. We've added drop shadows and lighting. We're tracking around. And we've added connected animations. So as I click on one of these elements, we get that beautiful connected experience. We get a seamless crossfade. And now I'm able to sort of use the dial and just kind of come in and adjust the exposure, make it brighter and darker here using the dial. You can see that the button in question here is using that sort of nice effect. It's using the composition effect brushes. And we're using the show and hide animations to automatically make things feel fluid and beautiful. We have the back animation working. Had a lot of fun working on that over the weekend to make it work properly. It really brings this notion of connected kind of connected flow between the pages. And it doesn't feel like a page navigation. It really feels like a fluid transition. On the inking side, I can build a collage. So it's using an ink canvas. And I can come in using my exceptionally bad art skills once again to try and create a masterpiece. I'm drawing a few objects here. And wouldn't it be nice if we could actually turn that into a collage? So I click the right mouse button. I use the shape analysis capability. And I can then just populate those, hopefully with images, bang, and
nice.
There we go. I built a collage. So again, this is really just trying to show a connected experience end to end. And it's trying to really show a bunch of the features that we've shown you, which are in themselves not particularly noteworthy. But when you bring them together into this kind of delightful experience, pay attention to craftsmanship and really refined polish, we really think that it'll help engage your users.
Right.
So by all means, do go check out some of these end-to-end samples. The specific version of that photo gallery app is currently sitting in my personal Git repo. There's a PR in flight right now. So Shen, if you're watching, please approve that so that everyone can get it from the official source coming very soon. So let's wrap it up with some resources and call to actions that we have for you today. So there's a whole bunch of resources available. And we've obviously tried to kind of show and illustrate those throughout the talk and give you links. But here are some other good ones to know about. Firstly, documentation. We've moved now to a much more kind of open documentation system, docs.microsoft.com. It's the one place to go where you can kind of see and contribute to our documentation.
Right, it's open. If you find a mistake, you can press edit, let us know, and
exactly.
We'll take a look.
Which is awesome. The second one, the Windows backlog, and this is for our developer platform. This is showing you at a dev platform level, what are the things that we're thinking about? What are the things, the feedback that we've heard that we're kind of considering for future releases? I think, David, you're going to say something about bugs as well.
Yes, you can.
You can.
So these also tracks the bugs that are currently we're tracking to fix. And so you can take a look, you can see which one applies, see if your bug is known to us and how it's being fixed and when it's being fixed.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
But then these other two are very interesting. These are a design guide and a guide to composition. We've talked a lot about sort of engaging apps and beautiful stuff. And a lot of you may think, well, I'm just a single developer. I don't have a designer to help me build some of this engaging stuff. What do I do? Well, this is a great guide that was written by Michael Crump, one of our great collaborators, one of our sister teams. And this really is designed for me as a developer. I may not really understand how to think about design. How do I tackle that, break it down, think about it, and embody it in my app? Great resource. It's a PDF that you can get from that link. And he's also put together a similar link for composition. So some good resources there. And then finally, just how do you communicate with us? You know, we're really open. We want to hear from our users. We want to hear what we're doing well. We want to hear equally importantly, if not more so, what are we doing badly? Like the community is a huge deal for us. So please do follow us on Twitter if you want to see like new samples that we're pushing out, those kind of things. If you want to connect with the team, there's a link to a resource site that we put up where you can learn about our insider program. So if you want to come and actually be even more connected with us, we have an insider program. It's detailed at that resource link. And then finally, a couple of sample links to get the various things that we've shown you that you can click on and follow. So I hope that's been a useful hour. Thank you very much for your attention and time. It's been great and awesome to talk to you.
And see you next time.
See you at Build.